When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
It's not very often I have a villain on the show, but today I have a villain on the show. His name is Zach Renstrom. Now, Zach, there are people out there who... you know, I don't like the water guy, and he makes too much money, and he decides everything about growth, and you hear it all, right?
Yeah.
You hear it all. But not very often does someone call you a villain, especially in print.
In print.
With a picture of you that they set up.
In a national magazine.
Time magazine. If you want to see a picture of Zach, go to time.com, and there's a story about water. And about, I don't know, halfway down, if you scroll down through this story, there's a picture of Zach standing in, thigh-high water in front of a tree. And the caption says, and I'm going to read it direct there, Zach. Water District General Manager Zach Renstrom in Sand Hollow Reservoir cast as a villain in the water crisis. Yeah, Renstrom pivoted toward an ambitious conservation plan. Wait a minute. They're like contradicting themselves. You want an ambitious conservation plan. That sounds like a good thing, not a bad thing.
Well, if you have to kind of read the whole article to see the whole tone of it, where it's kind of coming from. And so St. George / Washington County gets portrayed very negatively in national press in regards to how we use our water.
Okay.
And so this article is kind of talking about that. Hmm. So.
And you're the main antagonist.
Apparently I'm the poster child for that. And so that's why they called me out as a villain. And even when Time came and did their articles, they went around talking to people, local citizens, and some of the citizens, it's one of those things, people don't necessarily like doing certain things, but it's kind of like, well, it's necessary type thing. Nobody wants to take medicine, but it's kind of one of those things. Sometimes it's necessary.
If you don't want to die, then you will take it.
Yeah. And so they went around, talked to some people and so I got cast as a villain.
Is this the story, I guess, approaches it for talking about the Navajo Nation. Is that kind of why you're the bad guy? Cause they're not getting what they want.
Not so much that. Okay. I mean, so what the main gist of the article is that here in Washington County, our water is, we've developed our water sources. Our water actually is very, very cheap here in Washington County. We have some of the cheapest water rates in the country, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And our water use, we have water. But over on the Navajo tribe or the reservation, they do have a water issues going on over there. And so a lot of their homes don't have running water, or they have to truck water from long ways away. The article doesn't necessarily get into the details of why or what's happening there. It just says basically here in Washington County, they have golf courses and swimming pools and everybody has running water and yada, yada, yada. Where over on the tribal land, a vast majority of their population has to like truck water to their homes and to their cattle and all these other things. And so it doesn't get into the why and all that stuff. It just tries to do the two comparison.
Well, how does that make you the bad guy though? You're the bad guy because we have water?
Well, where I kind of get portrayed as the bad guy is number one, that it's kind of interesting because our water rates are so low. The article disagrees with our law of water rights, which I'm actually quite proud of.
Yeah. I'm glad too.
Yeah. So we have lower water rates. And then the other thing is like, well, look, they're just, that's in Washington County, they're just wasting water and they're just abusing water and they're not treating it with its respect or utilizing it as a special resource. And the article kind of implies that I should use a big hammer and go around and do more to that. And I just, first of all, legally, I couldn't do that. And second of all, I just don't think that's my role. So,
okay.
Yeah, so it gets into all those details.
It'll be interesting to see how this article is received, because in parts of the country, many parts of the country, water is absolutely not an issue. It's actually the opposite. They actually have too much water a lot of places. You look at, you know, a place like New Orleans or you know, any town on the Mississippi, Memphis or whatever, right there on the Mississippi. There's water everywhere. They have plenty of water. I went to Europe. I was on, you know, did a cruise on the Rhine River. Water everywhere. I mean, the Rhine River is ginormous.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to. They use the word river there, and then we use the Santa Clara or the Virgin River here. And, like, that's not a river. That was a river over there in Europe. So I think a lot of people will go, huh, what are you talking about? But it's a reality here.
So, in talking and seeing what's going on, because, I mean, Time Magazine is mostly picked up on the East and West Coast.
Yeah.
So the big thing is that the Native Americans / the tribal land or reservations, it kind of reflects how life on those are very tough, and that something should be done about it is kind of how it's being perceived. And so it's not so much, hey, Washington County's bad, Zach's a villain. It's more of like, hey, on these reservation lands, it's tough. And so in reading the comments and just hearing the other things about it, that's kind of how it's being picked up or perceived. It's not so much Zach the villain, it's more, hey, these reservations, what's going on there? And people could go into very deep like huge thesis of what's going on there and what's happened. So
do you like being cast as a bad guy? Is that
so
what do your kids think, you know?
My kids laughed. I because of the role that I took on, I get called out a lot. I mean, there's that old saying, you drink whiskey, you fight over water, and it's very true, and it's still going on. It's been going on for hundreds of years and that stuff. And so the position I'm in, people have very, very strong feelings about what should be done and what shouldn't on the full spectrum. And I'm supposed to try to do the best to navigate that and make sure we're using the best science, the best knowledge to make sure that we just treat this very limited resource with the respect and that we just need to be good stewards. And so that's what I try to do. And so when I get criticized on the spectrum, on both sides, every side, I just have to kind of go back and say, at the end of the day, when I go home, I did my very, very best. I've tried my very, very hardest to make sure that I'm doing right for the community.
I'll change topic a little bit. We'll take you away from the villain and talk about my personal experience. I just did, we used a landscaper here in town, and we got rid of our front yard grass. And we put in some artificial turf. We planted some rose bushes and different bushes in the area, and some little bit of river rock, they call it. It's kind of the bigger rocks instead of the little rocks. And received, first of all, the reviews from all the neighbors, like, wow, this is amazing, you know. And but second of all, we are going to get complete the process to get the rebate for swapping our grass out, and I'm happy to report I'm on board, Zach.
Hey, everybody has to understand this is a voluntary program,
right? Nobody twisted my arm except my wife.
Yeah. When we go back and we talk to people, people are very, very happy. They're very pleased, both from just the process. Like, we reach out and say, hey, was that a good process? Did my employees work well with you? Were they kind? And then we get really positive reviews on that. And then we just say, are you glad you did it?
Yeah.
And the same thing, people are like, oh yeah, it's easier to maintain. It actually saves us money in the long run. And so on both sides, it seems it's been a very, very positive program, and so we'll definitely continue and push forward with it.
So artificial turf has been around a long time. I remember going as a little kid to Houston Astros games on the old AstroTurf, and that was essentially green carpet on concrete. Yeah. It was not good, but it has come a long way, and they even have now the kind of turf we got. So a lot of the turf gets bad reviews for getting hot when the sun is shining on them. They actually have, depending on what, I don't know, weight or what, I don't know all the details, but turf that does not get very hot. We were able to buy some because that was one of our concerns, because that's the west side of our house, and the sun all afternoon would be beating down on that. We were worried it was going to reflect a lot of heat, and we were able to get some turf that actually does really well with heat. So Yeah, it's come a long way. And I now, again, it's only been, it happened 2 days ago. So it's only been 2 days, but we're pretty excited about it. And it looks great.
So I have artificial turf in my backyard, and my kids, they actually really like it. They're out there kicking the soccer ball quite a bit back and forth. And my kids, well, my son's happy because he doesn't have to mow anything. So they've come a long ways. And if you just go and say, well, this is artificial turf, they have so many different versions of it. It's actually pretty cool, some of the things that they're developing and working on it. And so I think it's just going to slowly continue to improve.
I think we had some grub problems too with our real grass, and so it was kind of right toward the end. We're like, you know what? We're glad this grass is gone because we are having some problems, and now we have this beautiful green front yard.
You showed me the pictures. It really is beautiful. And once those bushes kind of fill out just a little bit, it'll be really, really beautiful.
Now, in our old house, my wife had, I think it was like 18, I don't know how many, but a lot of rose bushes. She loves roses to the point where, and she figured out how to make them flourish, and to the point where she was known as the Rose Lady in our old neighborhood, and she wants that title back. So that we have now, I think it's like 8 or 10 rose bushes in our front yard area, so they'll be blooming at some point.
But, yeah.
I just know that you don't want to stick your hand in one of the rose bushes because they do have thorns.
Yeah.
They haven't genetically modified the thorns out of rose bushes yet, which is good.
And right now they have the Parade of Gardens going on where people can go. And it's been really well received where people can go. What it is we have people in the community that have xeriscaped their landscaping, and they've agreed to allow the public to kind of come and view what's going on there. And it has just been... People go and they're just overwhelmed at how beautiful these gardens are, and these are very well manicured. They take quite a bit of pride in what they've done, but it was a very positive thing rolling out, and so it's just neat to see people being more creative instead of just doing standard grass.
Yeah, I wrote an article a couple of days ago called Xeriscape, Xeriscape, not zero, Zero. Scape, and talked a lot about your Red Hills garden, desert garden up on the hill, and the fact that you don't have to. I remember in the 90s, even we were, you know, a lot of people were like, well, I'm going to xeriscape my yard. And honestly, back then it was mostly, you know, rocks and, you know, maybe to change things up, they'd put a big boulder in the middle and you might have a couple of cactuses, and it doesn't have to be just that. And I know you've talked about the Red Hills Garden and the Desert Garden up there a lot, but maybe just talk to people a little bit about some of the options they can do besides just rocks.
In fact, we don't want just rocks. So that is actually one of the things that we really try to emphasize, is that if you are ripping out grass, you need to put other vegetation back in there. Because there is a heat index that can occur, and so we want to make sure, especially trees. And so if you go up to the garden, you can go to, like, native plants. We have a section. We have cactuses. We have trees. We have a guava center. And so you can kind of go through, and all those plants flourish in our environment here. And so we have a section that's all, like, flowering that goes on, too. And so I encourage people to go there, look at it. This Parade of Gardens, people can go and see all the neat things that people are doing, and to me, there's a lot more options with a xeriscape landscaping than just grass. Like, grass is just, you know, it's just one flat out thing out there, but with these other ones you can do some really amazing things. And so I will say, also kind of a plug for our garden is we do that Halloween walk, and that is extremely popular. People where companies or entities will set up like a little scarecrow type looking thing, and you can kind of walk around there, and that's really popular and fun for people to do. And people go up there and they see, wow, this is amazing. And then it's really easy. If they see a plant they like, they can actually scan this little code that brings up the website.
Sure, yeah.
And show them how to plant it and take care of it. And so it's just been really positive, and it's starting to catch on a lot more.
And, you know, Christmas isn't that far away. You guys do it up really nice Christmas time, too, with the Christmas lights and everything. I have not been there for the Halloween display. I have been up there a couple of different times for the Christmas one, but very cool.
Yeah, and it's neat that just these companies and entities participate they go up and decorate these things, and we have a little awards that we hand out, and it's just very positive, and it's fun to go over there to see how many families are up there enjoying it.
Who's... We should shout out. Who's the director of that thing? Who takes care of that?
Ryan White.
So Ryan, way to go, Ryan. Yeah. Way to go.
He's phenomenal. Then we have some. He has a lot of helpers, but Ryan's over that, and Doug Bennett also is involved in that, and he's a landscape architect. He takes great pride in his work, and I don't know. He just comes up with some really neat ideas, and so I'm fortunate to work with him.
Only thing I don't like about the Desert Gardens is if you have to turn left coming out of there on Red Hills Parkway, scary, man.
So I agree.
Yeah.
And we have gone to the city of St. George, and we says we will even help pay for a light there. And I understand this from the engineers. They're saying, well, it doesn't quite warrant a light there.
They have their numbers and statistics. Yeah. There's
a book that they go through, and it's very specific of when lights are required or not. But they're getting so much. The volume up there is so high, it would be nice to have a light there. So I'm pushing for it. But
and I would advocate anybody that is there and needs to go would be east, I guess, or northeast. Yeah. Turn right, go down, and turn around, because turning left across Red Hills Parkway is a scary prospect.
You know, when you have Mayor Randall on the radio, you can make a suggestion.
Okay. We'll do it. We're talking with Zach Renstrom today. We're talking about water. He's a villain, apparently, according to Time Magazine, in the fight for water. There's an article. If you're just tuning in, there's an article in Time Magazine. You go to time.com if you want to look at it, and there's a picture of Zach, and in the caption talks about he's a villain. It's kind of weird because the article is about water and the reservation and the Navajo Nation, and then it compares Washington County, how we have lots of water, and making then you the lead bad guy because we have water, which doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. It's not your fault the Navajo Nation doesn't have water, so.
But yeah, and the article doesn't blame me for that, or they don't blame us for the problem.
Not directly, but they imply whatever, you know, so.
Yeah, it was an interesting, when these news organizations come out and do these articles, and it happens quite often, and I really do try to always make myself available to be interviewed by press, you just never know what's going to come out at the very end. And so the gentleman that did this article and took the pictures, really nice guy. I actually took him boating. Yeah. He's like, hey, and I kind of mentioned I was going to boating with my family the next day. And he's like, really? And I was like, well, come with us. And came and took a bunch of pictures. But so you just never know the tone of these articles until they actually come out.
Yeah.
And so.
Well, I've been a writer for many years, wrote a lot of articles about people and about things. And that's one of the things. You're a writer. You don't tell the person what you're saying. I've always been of the opinion you try to spin everything positive, and you don't, especially if someone is kind enough to you to take a photo illustration of you standing in water, and they take you boating and stuff. You're not going to, you're not going to burn them by writing something that's not kind. But
well, that's one thing I got to do. He doesn't come out and say I've done anybody wrong. Like he doesn't say Washington County did this or what. You know, it's not blaming anyone per se for what's gone out there. It's more the contrast. But
yeah,
it's part of the job.
We had a conversation last month when you were on about quality of life, and you know I know one caller called in and said, you know, every time you tell me that I should limit my watering, mm-hmm. or we should flip blitz our grass, or we should maybe not be so water wasteful, that diminishes my quality of life. And mm-hmm. and I was thinking about that a lot here in the last month since you were on, and I'm like, well. That to me, that's very what's the word? It's very narrow-minded to say something like that, because you know that's like saying, you limit my ability to murder someone else, so that's limiting my quality of life because I wanted to kill that guy. I mean, there are certain things that need to happen that's quality of life for everyone.
Yeah.
Right. And so for me, I was like, I think about that and I think, well, no, because I can't, for instance, you know, I can't go out onto Bluff Street right now, stand in the middle of the road, jump up and down and run in front of cars. Yeah. It will diminish someone's quality of life by them having to have missed me or maybe hit me, and it will certainly diminish my quality of life. That's against the law. That's not something you do. So, you know, it was a month late defending you on that, but I was thinking about that, Zach. I don't know if you have any thoughts.
No, it's tough because I know a lot of times, and you kind of brought it up at the very beginning of the show about growth. And what's happening with growth. And with growth, there's pros and cons. And so a lot of times some people focus on the pros, some people focus on the cons. And so they come to me and say, well, you should do this or you should do that.
Right.
And I kind of respond back. It's like, that's something I fundamentally disagree with. You need to go to your elected leaders and have them make these hard choices. Like, they need to come out. And so I've reached out to all the elected leaders of all the major cities in Washington County and said, what do you want to do? And they all came back and said, we want to make sure that we can continue to grow. And I says, okay, I will do that. And so that's why we have had to come out with a lot of these programs. If the city came and said, we're not issuing any more building permits. And I says, okay, you're the elected leaders. You were chosen to make that decision, I would respond to that. And so our cities have come out and said, we want to grow, we want to continue to grow. And so I'm doing everything I can to make that happen. And so, so to make that happen, there's pros and cons. And those people that come out and start talking about that, I'm like, well, don't talk to me about that.
Yeah.
You know, contact your elected leaders.
And in talking with the many elected leaders I've had on this show, every one of them is like, look, this is United States of America.
Yeah.
And we believe in freedom. And if somebody buys some land and wants to build on that land, unless it's against a zoning requirement or whatever, there's really not a lot we can do.
Yeah.
And you know, they could change zones and they could, you know, make new laws or policies or whatever. But the bottom line is every one of them has been pretty adamant that, look, it's their land. They bought it.
Yep.
And they're allowed to develop it if they want to.
Yeah, and we only have, of all the utilities, like we bring in more electricity, we can bring in more food, we can bring in more gasoline. But with water, we only have a certain amount of water here.
Right.
And so we just have to work within that amount of water we have and make sure that we're good stewards. What's interesting is the same discussion that we're having, if you go back 100 years or 120 years,
yeah,
they were having the same discussion. Like in St. George, they were talking about people wasting water. They talked about, should we do new water projects to allow more growth here? I mean, there were some people back then that were saying, hey, we don't want any more people here. And there were some people saying, no, we need to really develop this and get this thing moving. And so it's just the same conversation. We just need to make sure what we do today isn't going to hurt our children in the future.
And one of the things I think is really cool is you're making efforts to, when we do get water, and it's not necessarily that common, but when we do get a big storm, water comes, we need to hang on to as much of it as we can, because if it just washes downstream, it doesn't come back. It's gone forever.
Yeah.
So, and that's important. That's why we have, Sand Hollow, and that's why you're working on other reservoirs. I think the total six planned right now in the future?
That we'd hope to build six, yes,
yeah,
in the future. So, some are actively under construction, and some are in the someday category.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy, 935 on KDXU. Zach Renstrom is with me from the Washington County Water Conservancy District. He's the general manager, but I like to call him the water czar. Or a villain if you read Time magazine. Let's get some nuts and bolts stuff. Watering right now, this time of year, we have this weird hot week, maybe 2 weeks out of nowhere. It feels like, I mean, we should be, you know, in the 50s at night and in the 80s during the day, but it's going to be 99 today, Zach. What should we do with our watering cycles?
Yeah, because of the heat, those plants still need it. Even though they're supposed to be going dormant right now in those process, because of the heat, they probably need a little bit of extra water. But this is an area that you can save more water than and any other time just very easily. And that is, once those cold weathers do hit, hurry and pull back those irrigation clocks. Because that's what we see is people will just leave them on. And then in November, even sometimes December, they'll finally pull it back. And so, yeah, for this little heat, yeah, give them a little bit of water. But once that temperature drops off, hurry and pull those temperatures back because the plants just don't need it. They're going dormant. And so it's wasted. So,
all right. Yeah, little false summer something yeah. going on here for the next week or two. And hopefully it'll cool down. I do football games on Friday nights, Zach. I was looking at the forecast for Friday for 5 or 5:30 Friday night when I'm setting up my equipment. It's supposed to be 102.
Isn't that crazy?
I'm like, it's late September. It can't do that to us.
I got to look up when what's the record on the last day when it's over 100 degrees. And I haven't done the research.
We're probably getting close. Yeah.
But I think, this is an unusual one to get 100 this late. So
I'm glad we are water prepared, though.
Yeah, I mean, this summer was tough. I mean, it was so hot for so long. Yeah. We didn't quite beat the record of consecutive days over 100 degrees, but we got really close. Very little monsoons. But overall, like Sandhall Reservoir is 80% full. And so it's good to know that all the conservation we're talking about, we're seeing that the effects of that, and our reservoirs are a good place. And so even if we had like a really miserable winter, like they did like in 2002, mm-hmm. where we just literally got no runoff, I can say, yes, we will definitely have water for next summer because of what we have stored in our reservoirs right now.
What would be the number for Sand Hollow if going into winter, so this time of year, mm-hmm. That would be worrisome? Would it be at 50% or lower than that?
Anything under 50% would make us very nervous because we just don't know what the winter is going to do. And that's the tough thing. And so when we go back and look at other winters about how low the runoff was, like I said, that year, 2002, was a really, really low year across the whole western United States. We got no or very, very little water. Well, I want to make sure we have water stored for at least 2 years. And so if it was at, 50 or 40% and I'm looking at no runoff, that would say, okay, we'd probably have water for that summer. But then the next year, we're So it's good. 80% Sand Hollow quails. We do it a little bit unique, but it's still doing really well. Gunlock's dropped off a lot this year, but it's still okay. And so it's good to see all that.
Where are we at on Chief Toker Reservoir? Is it getting there?
Yes. So the foundation's done. We did all that work. We're in the process of putting out the bid for the actual foundation portion of it. That'll be the part that sticks above the ground. Mm-hmm. And so they are just finishing those documents. We have 5 qualified bidders because we just can't open it up. We have to make sure whoever bids on it is qualified. And so we'll send it to those 5 bidders and they'll come back. And so we should be moving dirt out there again, definitely by the end of the year. You'll see massive trucks out there moving again.
There's that old funny meme that says, remember the bridge you're driving on right now was put out to the lowest bidder. how do you feel about that bridge now? And but I mean, in all seriousness, they have to be qualified for it's not just the lowest bidder and you have Joe Schmo going out there, I can build that. And you actually have to certify people.
Yeah. So we have qualified bidders. And then even with the qualified bidders, we go in and we say, we have inspectors there all the time. So the engineers themselves will go out there quite often and inspect things and make sure that's going on. And then we just have our flat out inspectors that are out there making sure anything that's moving or being placed is being inspected and tested. And then on top of that, because dams are just one of those things that just, there's a sensitivity that they can't, like it's one of those things that can't fail.
Right.
We actually have also gone out and hired a gentleman that actually has experience building dams. And so he goes out there, he's kind of just used as an expert, and he'll go out there and walk the site. And so it's just one of those things, we have multiple things. It's expensive to have all those people out there, but if you have any questions about that, Google 1990 flood in Washington County and you'd understand why I'm so hypersensitive about it.
Yeah, it does happen a little bit occasionally. Yeah. We had, of course, the dam at Quail.
Yes.
Fortunately, no lives were lost.
Right.
But there was some, evacuations and people lost their houses and things. So.
Yeah. And I mean, that was back when the whole area that the flood went through and stuff like that was all farmland. And that same land.
It's full of people now.
It's full of people and buildings and houses. And it's one of those things that keeps me up at night and that we spend a lot of time on.
You cannot, you mentioned it, it cannot fail. You can't screw up on this one. It's got to be, it's got to be. How big will the Chief Toker Reservoir be when the dam is actually, when you actually dam the water off?
So it'll be fairly good size. So there won't be like ski boats out there, but there'll be kayaks and paddle boats. And so smaller than Coal Up Reservoir, but a lot bigger than Ivins is kind of in between those two. And so when it's full, it'll be an amazing recreational opportunity for people just to go out there and join and play in it. But then on the agricultural side, it's going to be a really positive thing for the agriculture because the Toker system out there is very limited just because of the hydraulics of where we get the water and limitations. And then now just having that reservoir there sitting there, it'll solve a lot of those hydraulic problems to give people the more flexibility in what they do with watering and irrigating the farms out there.
What's the next one is due to maybe start looking at after Toker?
So, of course, we have Graveyard and Dry Wash on the west side of the county. And so we're just kind of working with the agencies on that about which one we go first on. So we really hope to build Dry Wash first. I mean, excuse me, Graveyard first.
Graveyard first. Did we ever come up with a better name? I tried.
We're working.
Yeah.
So Graveyard we hope to build first, but because that is on BLM land, there's some things that we have to mitigate there. That may push Dry Wash first, but we really are trying to push Graveyard first.
Are there some environmental NIPA, whatever, all of the
NIPA,
is there some problems there that we have to worry about?
Yes. So you'll get me going on this, won't you?
Well, let's do it.
So it went through the entire environmental review process.
Yeah.
And so the BLM's like, yep, it looks good. Go build it. And we're like, great, we'll build it. And so, but we'll only build it when it's necessary. And so they're like, yes, the document says.
That was your first mistake right there.
Well, the documents say, yeah, this will be needed and at the appropriate time to build it. Great. And so we go out. We're like, great, we're ready to build it. We go to the BLM, say we're ready to build it. The BLM's like, okay, you have to mitigate two things. And we're like, okay, and there is some wetlands area down below. And we're like, okay, we can mitigate that. And then a tortoise crawled across.
One tortoise.
Yeah, well, they just found tracks.
They didn't even find the tortoise, they just found tracks.
And so they're like, well, you have to mitigate the tortoise.
It could have been some teenager with fake tortoise tracks.
It could have, yeah. So we're like, okay, we'll go do some things there, but that takes process. And so the BLM's like, okay, we're getting to a good place, but then we have to go get more permits from other federal agencies. So those federal agencies like, well, we've got some more questions. And so it costs a lot. I mean, when people complain about like, why is it so expensive or why am I paying for all this? Part of the process is like, when these questions come in, it's not like I can just write a paragraph or an email saying, hey, this is the answer. It's one of those things I have to go hire geologists. And then I have to hire biologists. And it's just not a biologist. It's a tortoise biologist. It's a bird biologist. And they all respond. And so,
unbelievable.
And then we hire an attorney that specializes in this area of the law to take all that information, combine it, and then give it to these federal agencies to work it out. And so,
That's amazing to me. They have all these specialists that I read a story today on the news about how the FDA has been rubber stamping some of the containers our food comes in for the last 50 years. Mm-hmm. That knowing full well they were bleeding carcinogens into our processed foods. And the EPA says, well, it's not that much. It's not a big deal. So the government, the FDA, says, yeah, it's okay if humans get cancer and die, but boy, if we see a tortoise track, we're going to stop the whole project and make you hire specialists to. It's actually amazing.
So
it boggles the mind.
So just recently, we had a large group of congressional staff from all parties. So it was equal Republicans, Democrats, and they actually came to Washington County. Some of it was the first time that they have ever been west of the Mississippi River.
Yeah.
And so we were talking to them, and we're like, listen, you have to understand, this environmental review process has nothing to do with what's best for the environment. Like, I'd much rather take this money, because there are some areas that are critical and areas that we need to protect. I says, I'd rather take all this money and work with landowners and talk with them and come up with some really creative ideas, rather than just spending millions of dollars on paperwork that does nothing. And so, and just the process is just way out of control.
Did any of these congresspeople, did a light bulb come on for any of them? Or
I mean, it's hard. I mean, they were very friendly and they were talking about it. Like, to them, it was interesting. We were sitting up on this bluff, and we were looking out kind of across the Arizona Strip, and there's just nothing out there. Like, you might say a dirt road. And this lady turned to me, and I think she was from Arkansas. Anyways, she turns to me, and she's like, well, who owns all this land? And I says, well, this is all the federal government
owns. You do, yeah.
Yeah, and she's like, the federal government owns all this? And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, it was mind-boggling for her. Like, she couldn't wrap her mind around this vast amount of land that just goes for miles and miles. That's all owned by the federal government. So I brought it up to her, and I says, if we want to do anything, if I want to run a power line out there, a water line out there, anything, it takes millions of dollars, yeah, and yada, yada, yada. And so hopefully we kind of help them understand it's just not, I mean, everybody wants to protect the environment, so let's do that. Let's not create bureaucrats. So,
well said. We'll be right back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
All right, we've come down to the monthly report on the Warner Valley Reservoir, the Warner... They've been talking about it for as long as we've had a radio station here in KDXU and longer. And I asked Zach about it about once a month. And is it ever going to happen? And Zach's answer is, well, maybe, right? Usually?
Well, we're 1 month closer.
Yeah. To what, though?
So we're in that process of doing a land swap at the BLM.
Okay.
And so to do that, it has to go through this NEPA process that we've been talking about.
Yay, NEPA.
And so hopefully, shortly, they keep promising me that they'll put out what's called the environmental assessment, where they put it out and the public will have an opportunity to comment on it. So right now, the schedule is that we'll do this land exchange where the BLM will acquire critical habitat and we'll acquire the land site. We're hopeful that process is completed by next year. And then once we own it, then it just becomes a matter of a balanced mass equation of we'll build it when it's needed. And so it's a very expensive project. It's $200 million to build Warner Valley Reservoir.
Yeah.
And so at that point, what we'll do is we'll just say, okay, it'll take about 5 years to construct. And so we'll just kind of do the math and say as we grow, if we grow faster, we'll need it sooner. If we grow slower, we'll need it lesser out there. But at least at this point of owning the land and having it just ready to go, we can jump on it when we need it.
Besides the land and the NEPA, is there opposition anywhere else, like maybe from someone downriver to it?
I mean, I'm not going to talk about our lower basin states, California, Arizona, and Nevada. They, if they had their choice,
we wouldn't get any water.
We would give every, yeah, we'd send all down. But locally, actually, everybody's, I have not talked to one person that's against Warner Valley. In fact, a lot of the private landowners out there are trying to encourage us to build it faster. The cities want it faster because it'll be like Sand Hollow Reservoir. Like, you'll have water, you know, boats out there.
Pretty big, yeah.
So it'll be an amazing, just cool place to go visit and enjoy. And then, of course, it helps us with our water.
Now, my son is a dirt biker. He loves to go out in the wilderness, on the trails. Mm-hmm. How will this affect, aren't there dirt bike trails and sure. stuff out there? How will this affect that?
So
he also likes going on the lake and the jet ski too. So
there's a couple of trails up there that with this land exchange, the district will acquire those. I think they call it the West Rim Trail and stuff like that. So those will remain open. That area won't be flooded. So we will definitely keep it open except for the areas that are flooded. And then some of the camping out there right now, it's just, you know, dispersed camping.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll definitely have to go in and do some camping grounds, and we'll have to cut in some new trails and a few things like that to accommodate it. So I will say the ATV community, the dirt bikers, they've actually been really good to work with. They had concerns, valid concerns. We sit down with them, we talked them through what you want to do, and they were awesome to work with. They really were. And we were able to work out some, well, we just kind of explained what we're doing. It really won't affect the really pristine trails that they want to keep.
Did you think 10 years ago you'd be talking about building campgrounds and meeting with ATV riders and stuff like that? 10 years ago? 15 years ago?
I'm trying to think what I was doing 10 years ago.
2014, so.
So, yeah.
Were you a county commissioner?
At this point, 10 years ago, I had received the Republican nomination to be county commissioner. So 10 years ago, it wouldn't have surprised me that I'd be talking about campgrounds and water and stuff like that.
Okay.
20 years ago, yeah, that's a different story.
2004. Let's see, I was in, yeah, I'm doing the math here yeah. myself. We were both a bit younger then.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But 953 on KDX, we're doing a little reminiscing here.
Yeah.
The water table, you mentioned the reservoirs are pretty good shape mm-hmm. right now, water-wise. Is there any way, I mean, I have a friend who was a climatologist, and his job was to, climatologists and meteorologists are different. Mm-hmm. Climatologist basically is a guy that looks at everything that's happened in the last 100 years or whatever, and then predicts the weather based on past trends. Mm-hmm. He could tell you within, you know, a certain percentage, okay, you know, I look at September 25th for the last 100 years, and this was the weather. And, you know, 92% of the time there was no rain on September 25th. So I'm going to say there's not going to be any rain. Meteorologist, my dad was a meteorologist, and his was actually more kind of a, what's the weather doing right now? What are their clouds? Where's the high pressure, low pressure, all that stuff. But as far as climatologically, and you got the old Farmer's Almanac and some mm-hmm. of those, and my dad used to throw that off the stage sometimes. He's like, it's worthless, but, does it, do you know, do you have any feeling on what we're in store for this winter?
No. Oh, this winter, I have no idea. And I mean, NOAA comes out with their predictions and yeah. all these other things, and they show me the percentage, and if they're completely wrong, they're like, well, that's why we only said it was a 60%.
There is 40%, yeah.
And so what we design our system for is a dry system. So we're assuming that it's going to be dry this winter. It's going to be dry, you know. And we kind of proceed on kind of a very pessimistic basis on how we're going to supply water to our community. And then if it turns out to be a really good winter, then it's great. Like, we're happy with that. We're glad we got some extra water. And so, we just have to be prepared for the worst and hope for the best.
Hope for the best, prepare for the worst. Yeah, that's a good way to live life, I guess, sometimes, huh? Especially in your position.
Yeah, I mean, we do it even with our water tanks. We assume it's 115 degrees. Everybody's taking a shower, and all of a sudden they have a massive fire somewhere. And
yeah.
And so in preparing that, that's one of the reasons why you have reliable water. Like, I lived in an area where we only got water for, well, it just automatically shut off, and you'd never know when it was coming back on. And that's,
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so we just kind of adapt. I was in Russia, and we just kind of adapted to that way of, like, oh, the water might turn off. So we'd actually have, like, little jugs of water.
Just in case.
Yeah, and it could be like 2 days. Sometimes it was like 3 days. We're here. That just, I've never not had running water through my tap here in Washington County since I've lived here.
Sometimes it comes out hot when you have a cold on, but that's because that's the way we live. Somebody was telling me, I have a friend that lives down in Texas, and he said, yeah, it's that time of year, August is when he was telling me this, that the water comes out of the tap warm. And I'm like, yeah, we get that basically from June to late August. And I am happy to report I turned on my cold water this morning to wash my face, and it was actually kind of cool.
Oh, okay.
It was nice.
No, the temperatures on those lakes are starting to come under, and I actually had somebody complain about it. I got this email,
really?
Yeah, that said, "Hey, I have hot water and my cold water is warm.
Yeah,
and I want you to fix that." And we could,
okay,
but your water bill would be like quadruple. Yeah, like
put big
chillers,
refrigerators, yeah.
So, but that's part of living in St. George, is you have hot water and lukewarm water in the summer, and yeah, you just. That's why we have refrigerators.
I was going to say, you think back in time, and you were talking about, you know, 100 years ago, the fight over people using too much water and that kind of thing. Remember, 100 years ago, they didn't have air conditioners either.
Yeah.
So water was kind of their only way to cool down a little bit back then. And, St. George would not be St. George that we have today without air conditioning too, and the ability to cool ice. I mean, we take ice for granted. Mm-hmm. I spent a week and a half in Europe this summer, and they don't like ice in Europe. Mm-hmm. I guess it's kind of a back in the day before they had freezers, you know, they couldn't get ice unless they were really rich, because they had to bring it in from areas, you know, like the Arctic that actually had ice. And so, and that just kind of stuck with the people. They don't put ice in any of their drinks or anything unless you specifically ask for it.
Well, so. I don't know, we're up on top of the Pine Valley Mountain. There's the ice cave.
Yeah.
It's not really a cave, but it's you can kind of see why it's called a cave. And yeah, they just send horses up there to go get ice out of that thing. And that ice is nasty.
You better hurry back, because it's going to melt. And it's also flavored with dirt.
all bugs, so, and it's kind of nasty. But yeah, so we're very. I'm really glad I live now and not. I like all our modern conveniences.
Yeah, and you know what? In 50 years, somebody's going to say, "Can you believe the what they used to endure back in the early 2000s?" And we're glad we're here, though.
Yes, we are.
Zach Rentz from Washington County Water Conservancy District. Go visit the Red Hills Desert Garden up there on Red Hills Parkway. It's absolutely beautiful. It's peaceful. You even have like a fake slot canyon. I don't know that it's ever flooded, but you even have a fake slot canyon in there and some beautiful vegetation. And Zach, I appreciate the good work you're doing, man.
Well, thanks. Appreciate it.
We're out of time. Be back tomorrow. Bill Hosser is going to join me, and we're going to talk about some happenings with the Hurricane Valley Fire District, as well as his hometown there in Leeds. It's all coming up on the show tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.